You want to talk about the Jagannath?
In a minute. Yeah. It's coming. Lord Jagannath is coming. So you think your initiation was something. I was also having difficulty to surrender. And to make it worse, a born-again Christian came to the place I was staying before the initiation, and he had preached to me all night. And so the devotees at the temple heard that I might not get initiated. And so then finally I telephoned and said, yes, I've got to get the red beads, I'm going to get initiation. Everybody said, oh, that's great. So then Janaki was put in charge of getting everything together. But because we were poor, instead of getting butter for ghee, she got margarine, which is like artificial butter. And instead of getting regular wood, she got fruit box wood, which is like wood you carry oranges and apples in. And it's not really wood. It's like wood put together. So Prabhupada had trouble making the fire go because it was sputtering. But still, I saw with his golden fingers, he got the fire going. And it was amazing how it just sputtered into flame suddenly. So, Shamadevi was also at the initiation. And I was also having difficulty with surrendering. Also, Jamuna and I decided we wanted to get married. So, at first, we just asked Prabhupada, would you marry us? And he said, well, first you should get initiated. So we said, okay, and that's why we decided to get initiated. So then I said, well, when do you want us to get married? And he said, tomorrow. He didn't want my mind to think about surrendering and everything. Initiated first, married the next day. At the initiation, most everybody's name was the same. Everybody's name was the same. Sam, Samrishunda, Melanie, Malati, Richard Rupanuga, Bruce Brahmananda. Well, like Malati said, everything was happening. I was still considering the surrender. And so I didn't hear the name that Prabhupada gave me. I didn't know what name Prabhupada gave. But Prabhupada stopped the ceremony. And he said, no. Your name is Guru Das. And my name is Roger. So it was a different initial. And so I was so thankful that Prabhupada had given me a name like Guru Das, because then I could be servant of the Guru. So then the next day at the marriage ceremony, finally Janaki got butter. Finally she got some wood from Golden Gate Park. The fire was going great. But the only difficulty was there was a woman also wanting to get initiated. Now, she first wanted to marry Prabhupada. So Prabhupada got out of it by saying, I am sannyasi, I do not marry. And out of his causeless mercy, he said she could get initiated. But she was what we called a very spaced out hippie. She was like someplace else in her mind. And she had a little baby. And so during the marriage ceremony, it was going great, except this baby was on her lap, and the head of the baby kept on hitting the ground. So it was very disconcerting. I was looking, you know, this is hurting the baby's head. And everybody was looking. The baby's head was hitting the ground. Prabhupada doesn't get surprised. He was transcendental a lot of time. But even Prabhupada finally noticed that this baby's head was hitting the ground constantly. So he turns to me and says, this will be strong baby. And then he told the woman, he said, hold that baby's head in your lap. So this is the kind of thing that happened during our initiations and marriage in the San Francisco temple.
How long do you want us to go on, Myraj? What is that?
So that Krishna is carefully planning everything. Many of us came with some various habits to this movement. And, you know, coming from this hippie background, one of our habits that I was rather attached to was that we shouldn't have to pay for things.
Stealing.
You know, well, we didn't even consider it stealing. We considered it liberating.
It was called the five-finger discount.
Actually, I was mentioning how we found butter very expensive. And, you know, like, one of the things, of course, we were learning was cooking. And this relates to Lord Jagannatha. So just in cooking, you know, now we weren't cooking for ourselves anymore. We were cooking for Krishna. I remember being told, like, so you can't taste it, you can't smell it. But how will we know it's any good? And the devotee said, you don't have to worry. You're cooking for Krishna. He'll decide. And we were told, well, you can't use this, you know, cheap cooking oil. You have to use butter. You have to make ghee. And butter was very costly. And we were feeding so many people every day, so how can we get the money? We had no income. But Krishna provided what I thought a reasonable solution to this dilemma. Every day this dairy truck would park in front of the temple and the driver would get out and go across the street to make a delivery. So when that driver was making the delivery, I went to the back of the truck and I would liberate a couple of pounds of butter. So one day I was in Prabhupada's apartment and he said to me, every day I see you, because his window was on the street, he says, every day I see you, you're going to some truck. You know, what are you doing? So I couldn't lie, but what I said was, in carefully worded English, I am getting butter. So Prabhupada looked and he said, yes, Krishna was also a butter thief. And the way he said that, I just understood that I shouldn't be a thief. I understood it. I shouldn't do that. But it so happened that prior to that incident, I had just aimlessly gone down to this store on the wharf, which was a place we used to do chanting. And the name of the store was Cost Plus Imports. And I had no money, so there was no reason for me to go inside that store. I couldn't say I was shopping. You know, I was spacing out. And I went into the store, and then suddenly I realized, you know, what am I doing here? Get out. And but on my way out, there were three barrels and kind of in front of the cash registers, which were at the front of the store. And each barrel had this colorful little figure about so tall. That's very tall, like 3 inches. 4 inches. There were some little different size. And I picked one up. And I picked one up that had really wide eyes and a big red smile. And that attracted me. But when I turned over and I looked on the bottom part, there was a little gold label that said, Made in India. And I felt a little excited because I was thinking, well, Swamiji's from India. Krishna's from India. And this is from India. We were kind of thinking anything from India was wonderful. And Prabhupada used to tell us later on that during the time of the British rule, the British products were sometimes considered to be more superior to an Indian product. So if something was made in Britain, you know, it was prized, it was valued by the Indian population. Well, in the same way for us, something made in India was prized, it was valued. So this thing said, made in India. So I just put it in my pocket and I left the store. And I brought it to my apartment And we had like a fireplace with a wooden piece over it, a mantelpiece, and I just put him there. We didn't have any altars in those days exactly. So he was just there. And one day, Shamsundar and Mukunda took him to Srila Prabhupada. They wanted to know what it was, and it was from India, what was it? And they put it on his little metal trunk, which was his desk, and to their surprise, Swamiji bowed down and made his obeisances. And they asked, where have you found this? So they said, Malati. You know, they were like, Malati got it. Oh, so bring her. So at that point, I was in the kitchen cooking down in the temple, and some brahmachari came and said, Swamiji wants to see you. So I just, like, I remember dropping everything. Just, that was it. You know, I left the fire, and I didn't even take the elevator upstairs. I ran upstairs. I came in. But when I got into the door, I saw this little figure on the trunk, and I thought, oh, my God, now he's caught me again, you know. So I remember I was, you know, I was feeling so excited to come in and see Swamiji, but now I saw this thing, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, now I'm caught again. So I just kind of froze midway. And then he said to me, so you have found this? And I said, you have found? I said, yes. He said, were there others? And I started to relax. I said, yes, lots of others. He said, two others different. And I said, yes, there were. He said, bring them. So so I suddenly I felt liberated. And then he turned to Shamsundar. He said, Shamsundar, can you carve large? And he indicated some height, and Shamsundar immediately said yes. And he started to tell the wonderful story of Lord Jagannath's appearance, how he came from a log that had floated in from the ocean. And he described the process of carving. So then we went to find a log. And Shamsundar wanted to be authentic, so he wanted to get a log that had come in from the ocean. So there was a place called a salvage yard. And the salvage yard was by the bay, and it, all kind of stuff that had come in from the water. San Francisco's on the water, so there was all kinds of stuff there. And we drove down in our, we had this Chevy panel pickup truck. We drove down there, not a pickup, but a panel truck, like a van. And we went down there, and this is a vast area. It's just like a vast wasteland that sometimes is even covered with water. And then all the stuff that comes in, they pull it and just stack it up here and there. And we found some man, and he was apparently the in charge. And we said, we're looking for a big log. And he said, you know, look around. So we, you know, we're looking around, and it's a huge place. We drove around. And we actually found this huge log. So with a great endeavor, we get it into the van, and we go to look for this man, but he wasn't there, so we just drove away, you know. And from this original log that came in from the ocean, Shamsundar can then tell you about the appearance of Lord Jagannath, because he was the first person in the Western world. Somehow Lord Jagannath used me as a vehicle to bring him to Prabhupada's attention. And Prabhupada used Shamsundar to inaugurate the worship of Lord Jagannath in the Western world by carving the first deities.
Well, this gave Prabhupada an opportunity to take us another step in Krishna consciousness by introducing deity worship. Up to this time, we didn't even know what Krishna looked like. There were some pictures. We got some posters occasionally from India with pictures of Krishna, but nobody had any kind of idea, and there were no altars really that where we performed in any kind of intricate deity worship. So this gave Prabhupada the idea, we will make this deity of Jagannath, I will stay here and I will install it. So it gave us the idea that, well, if we really go slow and make the statue very slowly, there, Prabhupada has to stay longer. This is the trick. He was always playing tricks on us, so we were playing tricks on him. So I put the piece of wood out on our balcony at our apartment on Haight Street. And every day, I had another job, so I couldn't work full-time on it. But just maybe sometime, only 15, 20 minutes a day, I would chip away, and it was pretty big. I'd never done anything like this before in my life, so it was new to me, but it seemed to that the art of doing it was given to me by Krishna somehow. And week after week kept going by. You know, Prabhupada kept getting. He would call me up. When are you going to be finished? Oh, I'm halfway done, Srila Prabhupada. All right, then I will stay longer. And this dragged on week after week after week. Finally, one day he even telephoned my house, my apartment. Bhaktivedanta Swami here. When will you be ready with the Jagannath? Oh, it's coming soon, Prabhupada. And then finally one day, knock, knock, knock on the door. In through the door walks Prabhupada. And Jagannath is laying there, and I'm putting the final paint on the Jagannath. So he had come to check on the progress. And he finally set a date. He set a date that this deity had to be finished so that he could install it. That was the only thing that finally made me have to work very quickly. By then I had to work too quickly. The paint would hardly get a chance to dry before I could put the next coat. So I was working day and night on the thing, finally, because he said it has to be installed in 3 days, something like that. And at that time, I had a packet of cigarettes. He had not even said to us, "Do not smoke." He might have said it, but it wasn't very important.
It hadn't penetrated.
I had a package of cigarettes sitting on beside the Jagannath there on a box or something. Oh, okay. No, I was. This was the first. This is only Krishna. I didn't carve all three. Maybe on the rough form. We were only going to finish the first Krishna. He saw that getting all three, no way. He couldn't stay a year. So when the Krishna was going to be finished, then he would install it. But apparently I had the pack of cigarettes on the rough form of Subhadra. And he saw that and said, with his cane he pointed at it and said, "What is this?" I said, "Those are cigarettes, Prabhupada." He went, "Pah!" He hit them like that with his cane and knocked them across the room. "You shall not smoke anymore."
But he said something else, because he was... Like, at a certain point, Prabhupada began to tighten the screws. You know, he was liberal, but he had to tighten the screws, because otherwise we would remain in our loose ignorance. So he was actually so kind, the way he did, like, when he... hit them off, but then he said, "Yes, it is very difficult to stop smoking." He said, "But just take one," and he went like this, "one less every day until finished." He said, "Don't let such a small thing as a stick of tobacco stand between you and Krishna."
So the deity was finally finished, and we didn't know how to install him, what kind of altarpiece or anything to put up there. We only had now, I mean, it's 12 hours he's going to be down here to install the deity, so now we have to build the altar. So we just got some redwood boards and laid them there, maybe 4 feet off the ground, and just put Lord Jagannath there. And then someone said they had seen a picture of a temple in India, and in India they covered the deities with a little canopy of some sort. So we got some tubing and formed a semicircle above the, way above the deity. I mean, oh, that's right. We put the deity way up high.
Yeah.
There was an altar down below about 4 feet, but we put Jagannath. This is a high-ceiling room as high as this pandal. We put Jagannath on a board way up there, about like
he
that.
You had to climb up a ladder.
You had to get on a ladder to get up there, because we thought, well, God should be at the highest place.
And Prabhupada actually told us to put the canopy. He said it should be blue with gold fringe.
Yes. So we formed the semicircle around the deity, and the girls made a corduroy or some kind of gold cloth canopy and with tassels of gold fringe around it. And then we thought, wow, it'd really be nice if we had some lighting on this thing. And of course, this is Haight-Ashbury, and we're psychedelic people. So we got a bunch of these high-intensity floodlights in different colors. Red, green, yellow, and blue, and put about a dozen of them in a circle around Lord Jagannath, and we put them on sequential timers so that they were flashing. And they bathed the deities in a psychedelic light show. We thought that that was really nice. So the first deities were practically like a psychedelic light show. People who walked by on the sidewalk and looked through the window and saw that became attracted to come in. And they would come in and say, who is that? What is that? And the devotees would say, that is God. And they'd go, okay, yeah, I can dig it. Only in this one time in history could Prabhupada have come to a bunch of people, thousands of young people, and said, this is God. And all of us went, okay, I agree, that's God. Well, the only time in history that could have happened.
Actually, for the installation, it would not be comparable to what the ceremonies that are currently the ISKCON standard. He was just put up on the platform, and then there was a tray where a candle was and some incense, and that tray was passed all around the room. Anybody who was in the room could offer that tray in circular motions, and a bell was being rung, and the mantra was being chanted. Prabhupada gave us the first instruction in caring for Lord Jagannath. And it was first the canopy that blew with the fringe, and then he told there had to be a curtain. We had to put a curtain around him. And then he told us that he had to have his own plates. And because he knew our mentality and our propensities to find old things, he said, new plates. No one else should have eaten off of these plates. So he had to tell us that, you know. So we got, we actually went to a store that sold new things that other, maybe somebody got a gift they didn't want, so they would go to the store. So it hadn't been used, but it was, still the price was reduced from the actual original price. And we got a silver tray, he said to get a, if possible, silver. We actually got silver plated, a tray, a cup, a spoon, and a bowl. This is what we were told to get. And up until this point, the way we would offer everything was we would just bring all the pots in the center of the temple room, and then we would bow down, and everybody in the whole room would bow down, and we'd ring a bell, and we'd chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And we'd chant like that for a little while, and that was how we offered. Now we had Lord Jagannath, and we had to make a plate and offer it to him. So this was quite, you know, a unique concept for us. And I remember one of the first questions, well, how does he eat? One of the devotees asked, how does he eat? Prabhupada said, he doesn't eat like you or I. He simply glances. He said, he can eat with any part of his body. If he likes, he can eat with his knee or his elbow. So, of course, this fit the image of God being, you know, beyond the material conception and plane, and we accepted that. But we had some interesting experiences early on with Lord Jagannath, you know, because after all, Jagannath is God, and, you know, there are certain things you should or should not do, whether we knew them or not. So at one day, the rice was burnt, and there was Uddhava and Upendra were arguing whether or not they should offer that rice. And one of them said, yes, they should offer it. And the other said, no, they shouldn't offer it. We can't offer the deity this, you know, burnt rice. But the other one said, well, he's not going to really eat it. He's only going to look at it. So because of that, they decided, all right, you're right. He's just going to look at it. So they offered it. So the offering went on the altar. The curtain was closed. Everybody would bow down. Started to chant, and all of a sudden we heard this horrendous crashing sound, and somebody lifted up the curtain, and there was a plate. Everything was upside down on the floor, and we understood, no burnt rice. We understood that not only is he looking at it, he's tasting it, and burnt rice was not acceptable. So we got that lesson in serving Lord Jagannath directly from Lord Jagannath himself.
So now our congregation was starting to grow. We had someone named Mouse, someone named Israel, whose seeker was down to his back. We had some people called the Three Wise Men, who would sometimes we'd ask them, "Oh, please go water the flowers or wash the window, front window," and they would step in the plants. They were also spaced out. So we said, "Well, you just go and chant. That's your job." And then we went to this place called Morning Star Ranch, which was a famous hippie hangout. And in fact, the person who ran the ranch, they wanted to take it away from him. He was a famous folk singer, and he had the intelligence to put the ranch in the name of God, so they couldn't take the ranch from him. So we went to this place, and at this place, there was a guy named Tommy, and there was also Madhavisa came from there, and Vishnujana, and Rabati Nandan. And I remember this... Devananda? Devananda. Mm. And so they came to the temple, and I remember going back to this ranch with Tommy. I called him Tommy Gunn because he had that type of personality. And he said, "I came here first with two blondes on my arm, and now I'm coming back with you, and I really like what you're doing." And immediately this Tommy started preaching to the owner of the ranch. He said, "You should take bhakti yoga." Well, the owner of the ranch was a musician, so he said, "This is my bhakti." He started playing Bach. So I noticed that these people were starting to really become nice devotees. Madhavisa was on his way to Big Sur, and I had made little stationery of Gopal Krishna, and I gave one to him, and he started offering his food on a tree. And Tamal told me he lived in a tree. So eventually Krishna got initiated because Prabhupada heard that he had played flute in a tree, and so he called him Tamal after the Tamal tree. And Vishnujana was a wonderful devotee, you could tell from the start. But we were still in our hippie mentality, like Vishnujana would sit at the feet of Prabhupada, and I was on the other side, because actually my Krishna consciousness was watching what Prabhupada would do. And so Vishnujana said, "What is that pink glow around the food when you offer it?" And Prabhupada said, "Just eat it." And so then it was Lord Chaitanya's appearance day. And so Prabhupada said, "Now I want you all to stay in the temple the whole day. First you chant on your beads, almost silently, or silently, then chant with instruments, kirtan," and then he had a manuscript of the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, which we read. So we would do it in that sequence. Well, there was also another devotee named Jim Kaur, who became Jayananda. And Jayananda appeared to be very simple, but he had a tremendous mind. He came as a taxi cab driver, and he would say to me, "Name a street in San Francisco," and I would name obscure streets, and he would tell me what was on that street, the houses, the stores. So even though he wouldn't like to talk, and he said, "No, I'm not good at scholarly things," he still had this tremendous mind. And he would work ceaselessly. He stood out. These devotees started standing out. And so another devotee came, Jivananda from Texas, and he ate some prasadam, and he never left. And then Madhavisa came back from Big Sur, and he decided to shave his head but leave a beard. So then a few other people shaved their heads and left the beard, and Prabhupada went, "Ah," again, and then told us, "You don't have to do that." So we're staying in the temple, chanting, and then reading the Chaitamrita, But now it's about midday, and we were getting restless. So Jivananda and Jayananda and I looked at each other without words, nonverbal communication. We said, let's go outside. It's stuffy in here. So let's go to where Prabhupada is staying and chant for him. And it was an apartment that I had originally on Willard Street. And so we went around the block and chanted, and Prabhupada came to the window. And he came to the window and went like that. And we thought, oh no, he's telling us that he doesn't like us and to go back to the temple. So dejectedly, with our heads down, we slowly went down the hill, and Upendra comes running out and says, no, Swamiji wants to see you. When he goes like that, that means come here, in India. Come here, come here. So we went there, and we didn't know, uh-oh. He told us, Swamiji told us to come, to stay in the temple, and we're going out. And so we go up there, and Prabhupada has that oceanic smile. And he said, Krishna and Lord Chaitanya have given you the intelligence to take the chanting outside the temple. So now I want you to do this every day. And so that was the origin of the Samkir Harinam Samkirtan in San Francisco.
Actually, the first Harinam party was a very ecstatic occasion because, I mean, as hippies, you didn't really have much thought about what other people were going to think about you. I mean, you could basically could care less. So there was no inhibition about, you know, presenting ourselves. But suddenly on this occasion, there was a little tremor of shyness. You know, we were suddenly going to go on this mission for Srila Prabhupada as a united group. So the shyness came not on our own, for our own personal concern, but because actually we were beginning to have the realization that we're representatives of Swamiji and that we wanted to actually represent him properly. So, on this first Harinam party, we went to a place called Union Square, which is like a central point in San Francisco. And Jamuna was on the harmonium, and there was a mridanga and kartals, and I believe it was a tempura there as well.
Maybe.
Oh, I remember the tempura. And Chamal Krishna had a very good idea. He brought some of the early Bhakti Godheads, which were just these pieces of paper stapled together, and a conch shell. So we all began, this kirtan was begun. And it was a crowded area, but there was also the area where the cable cars turned around. So there was also noise that the cable cars coming. Cable cars are these kind of cars that would go up and down the mountains of San Francisco. There was a little competition with the noise. But the sight of this group of people in these flowing robes, you know, mismatched socks and sheets for the men and the saris for the ladies, still it was something quite attractive. So people, they started to stand around. And as soon as there was a little crowd, Tamal went out with these stapled together back to Godheads and holding the conch, he started passing them out asking for donations. So simultaneously, Harinam Sankirtan in the Western world had begun and book distribution also began. When he came back to the temple that night, he counted out the money and there was not even $10. There was like maybe $6.10. But Tamal, he was very sharp personality. He saw the future. So the next day, there was more back to Godheads. And the next day, there was $12, you know. And it was becoming obvious that this would be a way to actually support the temple. Now, interestingly enough, the temple was being supported basically by Jayananda's revenue as a taxi driver. But it was becoming very hard for him, and so Prabhupada had actually told the brahmacharis to get jobs. So Tamal had a job, Gurudas got him a job at Kodak where he worked. Krishnajanan was making flutes and selling them. Some Murari got a job somewhere else. Everybody got these jobs. But then Tamal had written to Srila Prabhupada, and he was explaining they were working so hard, making little money, and they were being affected by the other people around them who were smoking, drinking, cursing, eating meat. So now came the report that they had made a certain amount of money by this book distribution. Prabhupada said, give up your jobs and simply depend on Krishna. Go out and chant. So immediately everybody was very happy to do that. And the next time they saw Srila Prabhupada, by that point, things had gotten a little slightly more sophisticated. They had, you know, little income was now coming regularly from the collection of the book sales. So Tamal Krishna got all the men matching shirts, you know, matching T-shirts, matching, you know, they bought the yardage of cloth, and so everybody had matching dhotis and matching socks, and it started to look somewhat respectable. And when Srila Prabhupada came, for after having been absent for some time, they were lined up along the side, one on each side of the door, when Prabhupada came and he saw this beautiful Sankirtan party. And he immediately said that they should start traveling all over. They should inaugurate World Sankirtan. And Prabhupada's next stop after that visit was going up to Seattle, so they immediately thought, yes, we'll go. He wanted them to go with him. And Jayananda was temple president, and as mentioned, a cab driver. He says, Swamiji, may I quit my job as temple president and quit my job as cab driver and become the driver for the Sankirtan party? Anybody knows for the temple president to step down, I mean, even nowadays, that's not something that you encourage. Certainly, even in those days, it was not something that would be lightly done. You can change your service, no problem. But in this occasion, Prabhupada gave his blessings for Jayananda to become the driver of the Sankirtan party because he considered that to be even more valuable. And he knew that the devotees were a little spaced out, but Jayananda was not spaced out, and that he would stay awake at the wheel and that he would safely drive them. So Prabhupada was actually flying to Seattle, and the devotees, although they were driving, they practically flew there also. And they got there somehow or other slightly around the same time as Srila Prabhupada, and that was the first event of a traveling Sankirtan party in the history of ISKCON, headed by Tamal Krishna, and the driver was Jayananda Prabhu.
Another important beginning was the day that Prabhupada called us up to his room, and he said that the Jagannaths like to go out once a year on a little trip around the city and see the ocean. So he drew a I wish I had the drawing today. He drew a picture of the Jagannath, the cart in Puri, Jagannath Puri, and said, you should build a cart like this, and once every year take the deities out and show them the ocean. So this was the beginning of the first Rath Yatra. He set a date for this, which was unrealistic for us to create such a huge cart. There was no... we only had Lord Jagannath still. We didn't have the other two.
No, they were all three?
In the truck?
Oh, they weren't facing different directions.
Oh, okay. Anyway. Yeah? In the truck. Yeah. So we decided to rent a big truck instead of we couldn't build a cart. There was not enough time. So we rented a flatbed truck and made some very quick announcements to people in the neighborhood that we were having a parade and a festival down to the beach, and mounted the deities in the back of this flatbed truck.
Made a Golden Gate part of every inch of flowers that was available to decorate this truck.
Yes, that was another escapade. Was every day we got our flowers from the temple by raiding the flower beds in the park. Another, going back to it, I'll never forget whenever we ran low on food and we needed food, I drove the getaway car, which was an old 1950s Studebaker station wagon with smoke pouring out. And I would drive Malati and Jamuna to the supermarket.
How much did the Studebaker cost?
$50. I would stay out in the parking lot behind the wheel with the motor running, and these two girls, Jamuna and Malati, would go in the supermarket and just fill the basket with huge amounts of food, overflowing with food. Hundreds of dollars worth of food in each cart. And then they would simply wheel the cart around the paycheck and out into the parking lot because everyone thought, well, if they have so much food, then they must have paid for it. I remember just unloading that stuff in the station wagon as fast as possible and getting out of there.
Actually, we put it in bags. We put the bags empty in the cart, and then we just fill them up, and then...
Anyway, going back to this truck, before entering Golden Gate Park, there were some hills like this we had to go up and down. And I was driving, and I wasn't used to driving this car, this big truck with so many gears. And I had my dog sitting in as a passenger. So just behind the first Jagannath car was the Hare Krishna car, and it almost bumper to bumper, and a few devotees doing kirtan on the streets, and some followers, but not many people, maybe 100, 200 people at the first Radha Yatra. And starting up the steep hill, the truck started to go like this, and the clutch popped and the motor died. And I had my foot on the brake to keep it, and the deities from crashing down into those cars and the devotees behind. And somehow I had to get that truck started and into first gear and pop the clutch without rolling back any into the cars and people behind. And somehow or other, Krishna gave me the intelligence to do it. It worked. And off we went again up the hill. That was the first Ratha Yatra cart. Prabhupada wanted a full report as soon as we got back.
Oh,
what happened?
Simpson Beach. Do you remember?
Actually, I can tell one thing about this. First, he also said we should distribute prasadam profusely, but that meant having some profuse Lakshmi, and we didn't have it. So I decided that, well, we could make chapatis because it's just flour and water. It won't cost too much, and I can get the flour donated. So I got a crew of hippies, and we spent the whole night before making chapatis, and they were just, I mean... We didn't have great chapati making skill anyway, and these were hippie recruits off the street, so the shapes were like every type of shape and holes in the middle and what have you. No butter on them, and we made them, you know, hours in advance. So by the time the festival came, I wanted to make 1,000 of them, which we thought was a massive amount at that point in time, and it was. And we had them, and by now they're like crackers, you know, like biscuits. And... The thing that was really amazing, though, we all had these baskets or these actually cardboard box passing out these, you know, brittle, dry, butterless chapatis, but it was prasadam. And we had such faith in prasadam that we were just approaching anyone and everyone without discrimination and offering them as if it was something absolutely wonderful, which in fact it was because it was prasadam. And we were so convinced that people were just taking them and, you know, accepting this prasadam and eating, you know. I mean, in retrospect, I realize, you know, it must have been awful. But because we were so much enthusiastic to offer Krishna's mercy in the form of this miraculous prasadam, that people were just taking it from us and accepting it. And then... the second thing was, you know, I mentioned about the flowers, that we had literally raided the park the night before, and a policeman had to come along with us for the parade. And I remember we went past this one part of the park, and he says to the other fellow, "Where are all the flowers?" And the other fellow looks, and he goes, he's looking, pointing to the cart, and he's, "There they are." And they kind of looked at us, and... You know, we were smiling. I remember all the devotees, the devotee ladies, that were just smiling. And he just said, "You can't do that again. You can't do that again."
And I remember at a London reunion, our Tamal Krishna Goswami recounted that experience of this photo job I had gotten him. My job was to take the developed film, and then there was a machine that would register light behind the negative, and I would have to choose a button from 1 to 5 to print it, and there would be about 3 to 5,000 prints a day, people on vacation, whatever. Well, Tamal's job was breaking open the film canisters and bringing it into a room for developing. Well, Tamal, being somewhat intelligent, then they promoted him from breaking open the film canisters to, after the film was developed, putting it in a room for drying, and then I would take up the negatives on hangers and print them. So Tamal Krishna Goswami described this room like hell. It was hot. And so that was why he was so ready to leave the job and start Sankirtan. So one night we're in the temple, and Prabhupada is there, and we were chanting, and then next door to us was a place called the God's Eye Ice Cream Parlor. And these people called the Diggers stayed there. And the Diggers would give out free clothing and free food, and sometimes they would borrow prasadam from us, and sometimes we may borrow things from them. So we were good neighbors. But also, the Hell's Angels, this motorcycle gang that was very tough, would stay there, and the police would come and raid their ice cream parlor. So I told the Hell's Angels that there's a trick that we learned. I was in the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King before I became a devotee. So we used to photograph whenever the police came because they would beat us. But sometimes we didn't even have film in the camera, but the police wouldn't beat us if we had cameras. So the Hell's Angels all started to carry movie cameras so they wouldn't get raided. So one night, Prabhupada's speaking, and we hear on the wall, bang, bang. So Prabhupada calls Gurudas, come here, and he says, go find out what's that noise. So I go outside and think, why me, Krishna? So I go next door and knock on the door, and this Hell's Angel comes with tattoos and swastikas hanging down, and he was real tough. And I was saying, well, our Swami's starting to talk now, and we were wondering what that noise was. They told us that they liked kirtan so much that they were banging off the wall in ecstasy. So I said, well, the Swami's going to talk now, so could you wait till we have kirtan again and then bang off the wall? So they said, fine. And so it was the flatbed truck of the Diggers that Prabhupada saw from the window that gave him the idea for the Jagannath.
Also, these Hell's Angels would chant with us, and they would ride these motorcycles called Harley Davidsons. So the way they chanted was, Harley Krishna, Harley Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Harley Harley.
And
they seriously chanted like that.
Yeah, and there was another man named Paul Krasner, a famous writer. He had a magazine called The Realist. So his daughter was named Holly. So she was a young girl, around 10, so she kept on saying, Daddy, why are they chanting my name? She thought we were chanting Holly Krasner, Holly Krasner, Krasner Krasner, Holly Holly. So people would get it wrong sometimes.
So Prabhupada put up with every kind of rascal imaginable in those early days. Somehow or other, he forged a number of us into becoming devotees of Krishna. And then the period came when we were well-formed, and formed enough anyway, that he wanted us to start spreading out and spreading Krishna consciousness. One group of us went, some of the devotees from San Francisco went down to Los Angeles and started a center. Some others went up to Seattle, Washington State, started a center there. Some boys went to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and started a center there. So little by little, Krishna consciousness was beginning to branch out. The six of us, however, had another project in mind, which was to go to London, England, and start a temple for Prabhupada. I suppose it's a logical place to end the San Francisco episode, and tomorrow we'll talk about our voyage to London and Srila Prabhupada's miraculous activities in London.
Is that all right?
If anybody has any questions, though, please feel free.
Does anybody have any questions about what we've been talking about this morning?
I was explaining how they were... Ethelavia, who always likes to ask interesting questions. Is the question you're in charge? He's asking how they like chapatis, but I was explaining that I think that they were overcome with our enthusiasm, so they were accepting them enthusiastically.
Didn't Jerry Garcia give you a stove?
Yeah, there was, he wanted me to remind. The stove, we had a stove that had a big grill on it so we could make large amounts of chapatis. What had happened that there was this, among our friends was this rock group called the Grateful Dead. And I went in their place one day and I saw they had this huge stove and I knew they didn't cook. You know, so I said, can we borrow your stove? And so they agreed we could borrow the stove, and it was a huge thing. It took about six people to get it out and get it into the temple. And then once it was in the temple, it had gone, there had been an entryway, there was a door, and then there was this other space. But when we got Lord Jagannath, that other space was closed up, which meant that the stove was sealed behind. And later on, after we went to London, I heard that they came looking for their stove, but when they realized there was no way to get it out, they left it there.
And then they went on tour, and that's how they became famous.
Huh? Jimmy and Annie's story. It was Jimmy and Annie's story. They started.
Oh, he knew it was a good place. Yeah. I'm just going to tell one dog story, because when we were talking about Prabhupada and the Swamiji and the dogs, and when we had our first Rath Yatra, Prabhupada was in Stinson Beach recovering from his stroke that he had had. And so he didn't actually attend the Rath Yatra, and he was really waiting for the report. And we went over there. And we actually took the truck out. But we at this point, we didn't have the dog anymore because he had been given to Ken Kesey. And we went out, and he asked, when we got there, he said, oh, where is your dog? And I felt really happy to report, and I was a little bit, you know, puffed up, you know, like, we don't have him anymore, Swamiji, we found him a new home. And I felt glad to say that, because he had, you know, dropped a few hints that it wasn't such a good thing to keep a dog in your house. But then I proceeded to try to tell him, we gave him to these people who, and they treat him just like a person. And, you know, I was trying to tell this to Prabhupada, and he goes, he is a person. And I said, but they treat him like a real person. And he says, again, he is a person. So I'm thinking he doesn't understand, because like they would let him eat off the plate at the table. So I started to again, but they treat him like a person. And the minute I said it the third time, it just hit me what Prabhupada was saying. He is a person. We are spirit soul. The spirit soul is a person. And it just you know, it hit me what he was telling me, and, you know, my dense covering had a moment of reprieve before it resumed its normal covered.
You say subtle hints about dog, but I remember it was a little more than subtle. In some of Prabhupada's lectures, he would say, you can have God or you can have dog. It wasn't so subtle.
Especially when my dog, Ketal, broke into the temple and got on his hind legs and chanted one day. So, do you remember when Prabhupada, when you went out to Stinson Beach, Jamuna and I were missing, and he asked where we were. Do you remember that somebody had given us some LSD, like our Yadabara yesterday, drinking the Lobelia by mistake? So suddenly we realized, oh no.
No, they had spiked the, you know, like the hippies were into this freely giving stuff out. So during our Rath Yatra festival, some hippies came and they were passing out this LSD punch. And they didn't tell people what it was, so because they didn't feel any need to do that. And some of the devotees innocently were drinking this punch, like Guru Das and Jamuna, and quite a few of them, actually. And so it left the, you know, at the end of the Rath Yatra, quite a few devotees were incapable of completing their duties. She wasn't born. She was born right before we were planning to go into England at that point in time. So he instructed Shamsundra that we should wait for the child to be born. So there was this, what we described was the first Rath Yatra. The second Rath Yatra, that was in July of 1967. The second Rath Yatra was in 1968. And at that Rath Yatra, which is actually when the punch story happened, we actually had a hand-drawn cart. Shamsundra and Jayananda co-partnered, and they built this wonderful hand-drawn cart. Jamuna and Harsharani made the canopy for the cart, and there was something else that happened that was really interesting. Up until this time, the deities were just there, like as they were. When the second Rath Yatra came around, Srila Prabhupada announced that the deities had to be dressed, and we were astounded. You know, first we had, you know, I mean, what's next? We had the plates. You know, now he's telling us to make dresses. And Shamsundra, when he heard that, was a little, he was like a little perturbed, because he was so meticulous when he formed the Jagannath, when he carved them in about his painting, because he had the little ones to go by, and he did everything, you know, within precision exactly. So when he heard that they were going to be covered up with dresses, he said, and he said, but it'll cover up the paint job. I remember you were saying that to me, it'll cover up the paint. But still, it was hard to imagine how we're going to make clothes for this deity. But Jamuna and Harsharani took a picture that Srila Prabhupada had drawn, and the first clothes were kind of like these puffy clothes and tight at the bottom with a shawl and a turban. And they made the first set of clothes for Lord Jagannath. So on that second Rath Yatra, he had the first cart that was hand-drawn, and his first clothes ever in the Western world. And then those wonderful hippies gave the punch out. And so at the end of the Rath Yatra, there was Shamsundra and Jayananda and me with the baby that had just been born, and nobody else was around, and there was a mandate from the city. We could bring the cart down to the ocean, but we had to have it out of there by sunset. And there we were, just the three of us, and I was useless, and those two were like totally exhausted from the whole ordeal of driving the cart, of building the cart, and everybody else was tripping. But somehow or other, Lord Jagannath sent some hippies along and helped to dismantle the cart.
But to answer your question about Saraswati, after she was born, I called. Prabhupada was in Montreal. He had some visa problems, so with a U.S. visa, so he was staying in Canada for a few months. And I called him, told him on the phone that Malati had just given birth to a daughter. What should we name it? And he immediately said, "You shall call her Saraswati." By telephone.
And in Montreal, Prabhupada held her up with one hand, and he asked me to teach Gursundar how to photograph, because he had other things in mind for me. So Gursundar came and took a photo, and Prabhupada held Saraswati up, a little baby, and he said, "They will say, what kind of sannyasi am I?" Yadavara Prabhu, you had a question?
We were talking earlier about the magic show that we all felt part of and that we expected on a daily basis. And Yadavara was just reminding us of an incident that happened at one point in early days in San Francisco when, as usual, we were several months behind in the rent and there was no money available. None of the devotees had jobs or had enough money to pay several hundred dollars a month. And early one morning, Malati and I walked out of our apartment on Ashbury Street. This is maybe 6:30 in the morning on our way to the temple at 7. And 6:30 in the morning, there's no one on the street in San Francisco but the fog. And as soon as we closed the door, we started walking up the sidewalk to the temple. All these $100 bills started blowing down the sidewalk, one after another, just in the air. And we start catching them and picking them up. So the rent problem was solved. No, there was no source for wherever this money came from. It came blowing in the wind down an empty street.
Considering the neighborhood, I mean, we could take a probably reasonably wild guess at what happened.
But these are the kinds of... this is the spirit that Prabhupada initiated in us, that we should expect Krishna to... perform his magic for us on a daily basis, that life should be lived in a magic way built around Krishna.
So you all can do this also.
This is a magic show. If you look around, Gurdas, look at this. It looks just like Haight Ashbury.
Put some strobe lights there.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when you were mentioning the strobe lights... I will tell you what happened in New Vrindavan recently. One very well-known initiating spiritual master, who's sitting just over there, decided to have a reenactment of mantra rock dance. So we had a wonderful program at Raghunath and Jamuna's house with a strobe light. At the instigation of His Holiness Raghunath Maharaj, and the devotees were dancing and chanting in ecstasy.
On ecstasy?
No, in ecstasy.
In ecstasy.
Actually, Lord Nisringadeva in New Vrindavan has his own strobe light, and once a year for his appearance day, he holds it in his lotus hand and flashes strobes out to the devotees.
I think these stories of early San Francisco will help give you an idea what kind of people that, for better or for worse, wound up being the first people to come to India with Srila Prabhupada, and why the yatra that we started here has taken this form and shape.
Actually, speaking of different types of people, you know, Prabhupada... he had exceptional tolerance because he had an exceptional mission to unfold. And he never denied anyone the opportunity to serve either him or the mission, because serving him was serving the mission. I remember one time we were invited to a brunch. A brunch is something between breakfast and lunch. So this couple invited Prabhupada and some of the devotees to their apartment. And most of us had kind of, you know, low-rent type of apartments, but theirs was a little bit nicer. It was had quite a lovely view, and they invited Prabhupada and the devotees, and they had this table already put out when we arrived. And I remember they had strawberries and brown sugar and cream, and they didn't have any plates. You were just supposed to take your strawberry and dip it in the cream and then dip it in the brown sugar. And they didn't even have a plate for Srila Prabhupada, and none of us even had the knowledge or foresight that there should, you know, that he should not eat out of a common situation like the rest of us. So this couple was also a very unusual, I mean, not by San Francisco standards, it was quite normal, but it was a male couple. Male, it was like the homosexual couple. And Prabhupada accepted the invitation. And so the head of the house, he showed Prabhupada how to dip the strawberry, and then he offered it to Prabhupada, and he accepted it. And Prabhupada was very gracious throughout. We were just there for a short time, but very gracious of their hospitality. And they were explaining how they really liked Krishna because he was a beautiful blue boy. And they were very happy to see that the devotees were feeding people, and they wanted to contribute. So every month they gave 100 pounds of rice, 100 pounds of flour, so we could have, you know, continue our feeding program. And they felt encouraged by Prabhupada's gracious hospitality, and Prabhupada reciprocated with their desire to offer service without making any comment on their, you know, lifestyle.
That was at Conway Hall in England, and I rendered it. And we will tell about Conway Hall. It's Prabhupada really liked that event.
Hare Krishna.
Hey.
Sorry for interruption. And
good job.
We would really like to thank for the first session, part one of the Hare Krishna explosion. And we'll have more stage two, that is the London, as Shyam Sundar Prabhu said. We'll have the next session. We would like to express our gratitude to His Grace Shyam Sundar Prabhu, Malati Mataji, and Gurudas Prabhu for sharing this first session of part one of Prabhupada's beginning days. So let us express our gratitude.
Rivo! Rivo!
Rivo! Thank you very much.